puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And that's the sound of Abandoned Manitoba. And it's time to check in once again with Mr. Gordon Goldsboro with the Manitoba Historical Society. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Keisha.
Now, remind us again of the clue for this week.
This week, we're talking about a site outside of Manitoba that is very popular with Manitobans today, but it wasn't always so. Outside of our provincial boundaries, that is. We're talking about the summer fun spot of Manaki in northwestern Ontario.
Now, isn't there a history book that's going to be published coming out soon about Manaki?
There is. It's a two-volume, 800-page book that started as a Facebook group for people who are interested in Manaki. There was a volunteer group known as the Manaki History Society, whose members were mostly multi-generational cottagers at Manaki. They decided they want something a little more permanent than Facebook. So they began collecting stories and photos from old timers. They researched online. They combed the pages of historical newspapers. Now, the pandemic did put a crimp in their research capabilities, but they persevered. And the book is expected to be printed within the next few weeks. So anyone wanting a copy of this wonderful book should contact Mr. Gary Bolton. He's the coordinator of the project.
You know what? We're actually going to be talking to Gary later on in the show about the book.
That's cool.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit more about the history of Manaki.
Well, like many places in Western Canada, Manaki is a creation of a railway. In this case, the Grand Trunk Pacific Railway. And it was part of something called the National Transcontinental Railway, built between Winnipeg and Moncton, New Brunswick, between 1905 and 1913. Now, I think the railway recognized the scenic and recreational possibilities of the spot where the railway crossed the Winnipeg River. So in 1914, the railway constructed a grand lodge at Manaki. It was redeveloped in the early years, and unfortunately, eventually it was destroyed by fire in 2003. But around that lodge, a whole cottage development arose, originally accessible by rail, later by highway, that has become so popular with generations of Manitoba that I think some of them think of it as an extension of Manitoba.
Well, your clue kind of made it sound like Manaki was once part of Manitoba. Is that correct?
Yes. So this is where abandonment comes into the story, which starts back in 1870. Of course, that's when Manitoba joined Confederation. At first, Manitoba was the postage stamp province with borders that were much smaller than the present ones. The eastern boundary, for example, was barely onto the Canadian Shield. It passed through such places as Lac Da Bonnie, Whitemouth, and Piney.
With Ontario east of the boundary, right?
No. The view of the federal government was that Ontario, which had joined Confederation as the province of Upper Canada, ended around present-day Thunder Bay. The area between Thunder Bay and Manitoba was part of the Northwest Territories. Now, if we go back to 1876, the government of Sir John A. Macdonald passed an act to create a 300,000-square-mile district of Keewatin. So essentially, that is what sat between Manitoba and Ontario. Curiously, though, this new district did not have its own government, but instead, it depended on the lieutenant governor of Manitoba to administer justice, to establish laws and institutions for local government. In effect, the area became a part of Manitoba, or at least the government of Manitoba thought so, and the Macdonald federal government agreed with that position. But the government of Ontario, however, well, it had different ideas.
What were they?
Ontario argued that its western boundary was defined by a treaty between France and England going back to the 1700s, in which the western boundary of Upper Canada was the westernmost extent of the Mississippi River. That's somewhere around present-day Wadena, Minnesota. In other words, the boundary lay west of Lake of the Woods, more or less in the present position of the Manitoba-Ontario border. Before the positions of the two provinces could be evaluated and a conclusion reached, the Macdonald government was voted out of office, so of course they couldn't do anything about it. The new prime minister, Alexander Mackenzie, well, he was less inclined to take Manitoba's side in the matter and opted instead to refer the whole thing to arbitration. That body ruled in 1878 that Ontario's position for the border was the correct one.
Manitoba were always the underdogs. So when was the border finally confirmed?
Well, before any action could be taken on that recommendation, the Mackenzie government was voted out of power and MacDonald came back into the prime minister's office. Well, he refused to accept that recommendation. In 1881, the federal government passed an act to establish the eastern boundary of Manitoba, and it was near Thunder Bay. Almost immediately, Manitoba began appointing officials to govern this new territory. They appointed a coroner, and but incidentally, that coroner also issued marriage licenses, because of course those two things naturally go together.
Absolutely.
They also appointed police constables. Manitoba established what they called the County Court of Varennes that was located in the community of Rat Portage. And of course, that's today's Kenora. Manitoba incorporated Kenora by an act of the Manitoba legislature in July 1882. And most significantly, I think, Manitoba began issuing permits in Rat Portage for the sale of liquor.
Now, how did Ontario respond to these actions?
Well, in July of 1883, when Manitoba announced that it would hold a by-election to elect a representative for the new area in the Manitoba legislature, I think Ontario realized this would further undermine its claim to the area. So 2 days, look, just 2 days after Manitoba's announcement, Ontario announced that it would appoint six police constables at Rat Portage. They would open a jail and a courthouse, and they would hold their own provincial by-election. And I guess coming back to the whole liquor thing, they began issuing liquor licenses too. And of course, this caused an immediate jurisdictional war with Manitoba. Anyone found operating with a liquor license that was issued by Manitoba was arrested by the Ontario constables, while anyone found operating with an Ontario-issued license was arrested by the Manitoba constables. You know, it sounded like it was just crazy. You know, it got so bad that Ontario policemen began arresting their Manitoba counterparts. They arrested the cops themselves. And of course, Manitoba couldn't let that stand, so they began arresting the Ontario policemen. On the evening of the 28th of July, 1883, an angry mob of 150 people used a battering ram to release two Ontario policemen who were languishing in the Manitoba jail. And then they burned the building to the ground.
Holy flin flon. That is crazy. So what happened then?
Well, the two provinces kept provoking each other. In August of 1883, Ontario incorporated Rat Portage as a town. Of course, remember, Manitoba had done that the year before. So the town had two incorporations. They both carried through on their plans to elect a politician for the region. On the 21st of September, 1883, Manitoba's attorney general, you know, the person who was responsible for the administration of laws in Manitoba, a fellow named James A. Miller, he was elected as the MLA for the constituency of Rat Portage. 7 days later, Robert A. Lyon was elected to the Ontario legislature as the MPP for Rat Portage. So he now had two politicians representing the same constituency. I think finally they realized this was just getting out of hand. They had to do something about it. And so finally the matter was referred to something called the Judicial Committee of the British Privy Council. You know, in other words, a body in England that was the highest court in the land, in Canada at that time.
So what did they decide? What was the conclusion of all of this?
Well, with the benefit of hindsight, we know how it turned out. In August of 1884, the Privy Council awarded the entire disputed area to Ontario. The decision was ultimately confirmed in 1888 by an act of the Canadian federal government. So that was really, that cemented the whole matter. Forevermore, that area was now part of Ontario. But, you know, one has to wonder what might have been if the decision had gone the other way. You know what? Manitoba's geography would have been quite different. People living in and around Lake of the Woods might do their shopping in Kenora, Manitoba, and pay Manitoba Hydro for their electricity. And that soon-to-be-published book would describe the history of a place inside Manitoba.
Wow. So tell me, what's coming up next time?
Well, there is a butcher shop here in Winnipeg that has always interested me because the building in which it resides is buried halfway in the ground. It looks like a basement. You know, I've long wondered what happened to the rest of the building. Well, next week, the story of how that building went from being a place to meet to a place for meat.
Sounds tasty. Thanks, Gordon.
Talk next week. Bye-bye for now.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.